McBurney here, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. Welcome back, everybody. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought, and we're glad to have you back on board. And I'm so glad I found that copy online. I found a copy of my legendary Joel Osteen video. Yeah, I relinked it there at the Worldview. In fact, if you go to our humble website, theweeklyworldview.com, and you look on the right-hand side, you'll see Joel Osteen's lesbian prayer. Click on it and watch the video. That'll give me some idea of how many people are listening. If by next week there's like 8 additional views, then I'll probably cancel the show. But if there's 800,000, then I'll probably start charging people to listen. So go ahead and click Joel Osteen's lesbian prayer. Yes, I know. She was in the news. See, Anise Parker subpoenaing the sermons of Christian pastors. And, well, she's backed off on that. But it did get me to looking for... My old video was near 100,000 views. I don't know who put it up. One of my fans, one of my millions of fans, took the audio from the show and put it together, put it up online, and it had near 100,000 views, and then it disappeared. So I figure I must have offended that fan. I probably said something that led that fan to no longer want to be associated with me, which is not surprising, as I've offended just about everyone at some point. And so if you've been offended, just get over it, okay? Maybe I was wrong. You could assume I was wrong if I offended you. Anyway, so there, a little housekeeping right off the bat there. Going to talk about a number of interesting things. First, we'll start in the strange religion file. Yeah, not the bad religion file, not the good religion file, but the strange religion file. Now, this was actually sent to me by a friend of mine, and I'm a little worried about this friend of mine. She also sent me a story about RFID chips in the new Ebola vaccine. So I'm a little worried about her. I'm not sure if she's doing okay. First of all, I wanted to email her back and say there is no Ebola vaccine. So how can you be afraid of RFID chips in a vaccine that doesn't even exist? But apparently she's concerned. Dear sweet person, and I love her. Don't get me wrong. But she sent me this, which made it into the strange religion file. This is from WorldNet Daily. A woman who says she prophesied the assassination attempt on Ronald Reagan says God has revealed to her a new and startling warning. That's right. And you would, I know, I don't know why he waited 30-some years, but hey, apparently he only gets in touch with her when things are really, really important. And she says if Christians don't start praying more than they ever have, this next election is not going to take place because evil is going to arise and the president is not going to be removed. And it's going to be very bad. Yep. This is from a young lady named, well, I don't know how young she is. She made a prophecy 30 years ago about Ronald Reagan. This is, I guess it's probably an old lady at this point. Glenda Jackson. Now, she claims that back in 1981, on a Sunday night, she was in church, and she prophesied that Ronald Reagan would be shot, but that he would not die. Now, she failed to prophesy the whole John Lennon thing, but, she wasn't in tune with all that, okay? John Lennon was shot in 1980, and he did die. And I think there was a prophecy about that, too, but I don't think it was this lady. Anyway, but all that aside, she says that she prophesied also the demise of the Berlin Wall and specific details about both Iraq wars. And she believes the days of prophecy are coming back, and even greater than they were before, she says, of course, because she's got a prophecy. She's got a word from the Lord for us. I wonder if she's prophesying about the RFID chips that will be coming in the Ebola vaccine. Anyway, do I think there's a chance that this next election could be suspended? Sure, why not? Anything could happen. The democracy, well, the republic, I'm sorry, that was handed to us by Benjamin Franklin, he said, I've given you a republic if you can keep it. Well, guess what? We can't keep it. It's falling apart. We're losing it. Anyway, I don't think you need to be a prophet to predict that this particular form of government that was instituted just a mere 200 and some odd years ago is going to end badly. And not that I want it to, I don't want it to. And I'm not making any specific prophecies here, okay? Don't count me among the prophets. I'm just saying you don't have to be a genius to figure out that eventually the people are going to steal all the money from the rich people and they're going to vote for themselves benefits until they bankrupt the country. They're going to make things that should be illegal, legal, and they're going to start eliminating all punishments for any crimes. And eventually the society will implode upon itself. It'll be attacked from the outside. Or it will just slowly fester into third worlddom, which is, that's where we may go. But anyway, there's your big prophecy of the week from Glenda Jackson. All right. We'll set Glenda aside here on the table. We may or may not link to that on the website. Now, what I just mentioned, I'll tell you what, I'll just go here to the justice file because this relates to what I just said, and then we'll move on. So you just try to follow along if you can. You know, I'm so nervous that I'm going to screw this show up. I'm so nervous that I'm going to do a bad job, and it's not going to be a good show. And I'm just scared. No, not really. I'm just making that up. I can stop any time, and I can edit the whole thing if I want to, right? But there's no need for that. We're going to move into the justice file from London. The French press agency reports that a man convicted. Why is that doing that? The French press agency reports that a man convicted of killing three policemen in 1966 is about to be released from prison. Why? Well, nobody's really sure why. Mainly, it's because he wasn't put to death. And he was sentenced to life plus life times three plus 147 years. And the judge at the time called this the most heinous crime of a generation, the murder of three policemen in 1966. It shocked the United Kingdom. A judge called it, yes, the most heinous crime for a generation. At the time, the judge said he did not believe that the murderer would ever be released. Well, guess what? Harry Roberts is 78 years old, and he's about to be released from prison. There's no exact date set, but his release has been approved, and it is expected to take place shortly. So it's just what I just said. People are going to make things legal that shouldn't be legal, and they're going to eliminate the penalties for all crimes. Eventually, that's what democracies degenerate into. Democracies and republics, all of it. Representative government by the people, of the people, and all that, it doesn't end well. And it's well, you can see what's happened to the United Kingdom. They have just fizzled and festered into second worlddom. And, you know, eventually there'll be a majority Muslim. It will be Londonistan eventually. They're well on their way. Releasing a triple murderer who should have been executed in, the crime happened in March of 1966. He should have been executed, sometime in April, I think, depending on how long the trial took. But let's go on. We go from the strange religion file. We're going to go right into the bad religion file. This is straight up bad religion. Pope Francis, who's been headlining the bad religion file lately, has called on Christians to fight for the abolition of the death penalty, and went on to call life in prison a hidden death sentence. So not only is he against the death penalty, now he's against life in prison. And this is the way it goes, folks. You turn your back on the appropriate punishment for a crime, and eventually you lose your ability to punish any crime. What are we supposed to do with them, Pope? Can they live at your house? How about that? Maybe we could lock them all up in the Vatican. Anyway, He made these comments over in Italy, as you can well imagine, Europe, a third world continent at this point. Italy, by the way, Breitbart reports that Italy abolished the death penalty in 1889. I didn't know that. They haven't had a death penalty over there for that. People are still being murdered in Italy, by the way. So the death penalty is still in effect, just not for murderers. And Breitbart goes on to report that life sentences in Italy are relatively rare. Fewer than 1,700 of the 65,000 inmates in Italian prisons are lifers, and none of them face the death penalty. Well, unless they're killed by another prisoner. Or they die of old age. Yeah, that's the death penalty, too. That's God's death penalty. That one can't be repealed, no matter what the Pope says. God will still keep instituting his death penalty. But eventually, human government, left to its own devices, especially in democratic and republican forms of government, even in the church government, with the Pope himself, eventually they'll eliminate all punishment and they'll legalize all crimes. That's where this ends. And there's just a few of us standing on the mountaintop shouting to you people, trying to save you from yourselves before you kill yourselves. Oh, by the way, remind me, no more forums on Media Matters websites, Raw Story, or RH Reality Check. So you may or may not know, here in Colorado, we have quite the political campaign going. It's drawn national attention, and personhood is on the ballot in the form of Amendment 67. And I have appointed myself as personhood's number one blogger on the forums. So every day I get sent to my inbox all the stories about personhood, and I jump on there and I read the comments, or I'll comment myself to the author of the story. The stories are almost 100% anti-personhood. Not only are they anti-personhood, they're virulently pro-abortion. Virulently. Did I say? I can't say that word. Virulently is what I'm going for. What's? Yeah, I'll let you say it. Virulently pro-abortion. These people are bloodthirsty maniacs most of the time. And so I get in a forum on the Denver Post or the New York Times or the Washington Post, the LA Times, San Francisco Chronicle, all over the country. I get on these forums and I'll do battle, go back and forth with these heathens. And I'll make my point. Well, I've decided I can no longer do, I did a Media Matters website and another website called Raw Story. And the avalanche of profanity-laced attack, it's just unbelievable. It's just shocking, the bloodthirstiness of these people. So no longer am I going to comment on Media Matters website forums or Raw Story forums, because I just feel like I'm wasting my time with these dyed-in-the-wool heathens. What I really want to do is get my main message out to people who maybe are not so headstrong and convinced on the issue. People that might even wonder, you know, when does life begin? And maybe do I want to make a decision about that? Should I think about that? Before I endorse abortion, maybe I need to think about, when does a person become a person? When does life begin? When could I be held responsible for protecting an innocent person? So my main point that I try to get out on these forums is that those of us who draw the line for personhood at fertilization, the earliest stage, well, we are sure and certain never to kill an innocent person by abortion. Now, those of you who draw that line elsewhere, well, you'll have to answer for God if you are wrong. This is a very serious issue. You should consider your position very carefully. That's what I want to say to all the people who are contemplating where they stand on the beginning of life. But when I get on this Media Matters site or this Raw Story site, well, it's just a blistering attack of just profane, vulgar. They mostly make fun of God. Anyway, so I'm not going to waste my time with that anymore. And then RH Reality Check, well, I can't because they've banned me. I've been banned on RH Reality Check. I even created an alter ego, a fake name, a fake everything, and they banned that within a day. I just can't get on RH Reality Check anymore. And it's not because I curse at these people or make fun of them or call them heathens or anything. It's just because I'm so effective in refuting their bloodthirsty, vicious, evil arguments that over at RH Reality Check, they can't take it anymore. And, of course, Media Matters and this other Ross story, I think that's those are all Soros arms because it's a lot of the same people. And they're just all on their way straight to hell with jet rockets. And, well, I'm just no longer going to cast any pearls to try to change their path. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Very glad to have you aboard in this week's review of last week and preview of next week and everything that matters right here on the Weekly Worldview, the world's fastest streaming podcast, depending on your download speeds available from your ISP. Now, I can't make a joke like that and go to this domestic tranquility. This other story, I have to wait until I get into the Muslims, and that's way down here. So let's go to 5-year-olds' problems. Let's talk a little bit about that. Because we have a 5-year-old here at the McBurney compound. We've got 3 daughters, 13, 7, and 5. So little Alexis, she's 5 years old, and she has a 5-year-old playmate. Lives a few houses up the street. She comes over every once in a while, and they play in the backyard. Couple of beautiful, innocent little girls playing in the backyard. And we've had to deal with some significant 5-year-old problems. And if you're a parent, or even if you're not, you're aware of 5-year-old problems. Number one 5-year-old problem we've had to deal with, gum in the hair. That was the number one problem. Yeah. Second, splinter in the pinky and or any other finger or toe or any part of the body. Splinter, though, that was the number two 5-year-old problem. But both of those have now been unseated by our latest 5-year-old problem, homosexual marriage. Yes, I know, you heard it right. Homosexual marriage is now a problem for my 5-year-old. Why is that? Because her cute little innocent playmate came over the other day and told her that her daddy says that it's okay for 2 women to get married. And it's okay for some kids to have 2 mommies. My 5-year-old was exposed to this because of a parent down the street who I have yet to... I just found out about this before we went on the air today. I literally just found out about this. I had to be restrained from going down to the house of my 5-year-old playmate's father and just wringing his neck. Figuratively. Anyway, I'm plotting what I have to do. I'm going to have to meet with my pastor and get some pastoral counsel on what do I do now that my 5-year-old's been introduced to, no, not gum in the hair, not a splinter in the pinky. No, not some kind of purple liquid in the clothing. I think that was our number 3 problem. Purple liquid, clothing, carpet, yeah. But not anymore. Now it's homosexual marriage with my 5-year-old. Not a conversation that I had planned to have with her, but my extremely attractive audio engineer and I took the girls to lunch today, and we had the conversation about God and marriage. God instituted marriage at the beginning. One man, one woman, Adam and Eve. No divorce, no immorality. We had the conversation with the girls, and I will seek pastoral counsel on how I am to respond to the parents. And what am I going to do about my five-year-old? Can I let her play with this other five-year-old anymore? I don't know what to do. It's very difficult. Not anything I wanted to get into. So I just wanted to let you all know what's going on. And then if you have any advice for me, please don't call. Well, I don't even have a number for you to call, so don't. You're not going to call. But you can send me emails if you have any suggestions as to what I should do about the situation. All right, now. Let's move from there into the domestic tranquility file. Now that I've given you a little insight into the domestic tranquility here around the McBurney compound, let's go to Detroit for some truly horrifying news on the domestic tranquility front. A 15-year-old suburban Detroit girl stabbed her brother in the throat and tried to stab her younger sister. Prosecutors contend that during the attack, the 15-year-old suburban Detroit girl's boyfriend, a 23-year-old man, was outside the girl's home sending her text messages instructing her on how to kill her family so they could run away together. Her mother says the girl was under this man's spell, and the mother says she didn't know that her daughter had a 23-year-old boyfriend. She says, "I didn't know about him," says the mother, and she's standing by her daughter. To some degree, that's got to be very, it's impossible to even wrap my mind around one of my children stabbing one of my children in the throat. But this mother now knows how God feels every time there's a murder. Because every time there's a murder with God, it's one of his children hurting, stabbing, killing one of his children. That's got to be awful. So she now knows. Now, this 15-year-old suburban Detroit girl with a 23-year-old boyfriend has been receiving significant treatment for depression and ADHD. She has been getting psychiatric counseling, and she is on a number of medications, plural. The mother says, "We've done everything in our power to help her." Everything? Really? Everything? Have you tried seeking God? Introducing your daughter to God? Well, maybe it's too late now. She's 15 years old. You know, for all you people, I think I've said this on the air, but I'm going to repeat it because it's worthy of repeating. If you want a ministry, your best bet is to have children. If you want to be a minister of the gospel of Jesus Christ, and you want to have an impact in the world to save souls, your best bet is to have children and teach them early that there is a God. That they're not God, there is a God. Teach them who Jesus Christ is before they develop ADHD and they're on SSRIs. It's the most effective ministry I've had in my life. But maybe I'm just not all that good of a minister. But this mom has not done everything in her power to help her daughter. And it's just sad to see. I think this is why God is merciful. Because he knows that children are corrupted by their corrupt parents before they even have an ability to recognize the corruption, and they're pretty much ruined for life by their parents. And so God is very, very merciful, and he gives us many, many opportunities to repent. All right, from there we go to reason number 830 to get or keep your kids out of the public schools. Reason number 830, they may be shot and killed. Now, I know that's been reason number starting. We started at 666 because the first 665 were obvious. Number one, godless curriculum. And all the way through 665. Number 666 was your children may be shot and killed. And I know that that reason has appeared numerous times in the list, but bear with me again because we've had another shooting up in Washington State. One student in the cafeteria. Shot dead, another student, a girl, and seriously wounded four others before he killed himself. NBC News reports many are asking, why did he do it? Why? Why did he do it? Well, the details will come out. But the main reason why he did it was because he doesn't understand the value of human life, and he does not understand what's going to happen to him in the afterlife. It's never been explained to him, this kid, this murderer, who's right now in the hands of the living God, facing punishment and judgment. I will assert my suspicion that this high school student had no idea that he would face the living God and be judged. He also had no idea of the value, the eternal value of the lives that he took in that cafeteria. As far as he knew, they all evolved together from slime. Everybody came from the goo through the zoo to you. And he was mad about something and he decided to kill them. He had no idea of the eternal value of those lives or of his own life. That's why he did it. Now, the details will come out. We've got family members. By the way, two of the people he shot were his own cousins. He shot every one of them in the head. And two of them were his cousins. And family members say that there was a romantic relationship had soured. Social media accounts and family members suggest that a romantic relationship had soured. Now, that's a bit misleading because it was not a romantic relationship. It was a sexual relationship.
But, cousin?
No, with one of the girls. The girl he killed, more than likely. We'll find out. Not with one of his cousins. He shot two of his male cousins, just to be clear. But it was not a romantic relationship because 15-year-old people are not capable of a romantic relationship. Now, they are capable of a sexual relationship, and that's what they were having. And that went bad, and that's probably the straw that broke the camel's back. You pile that upon a young man's lack of understanding of the value of life and his eternal standing before the living God, and that's why this happens, and that's why it happens every time. The kid's grandfather, one of the kids who was shot and is right now in the hospital fighting for his life, one of the kid's grandfathers says that the three boys couldn't be closer than three brothers, referring to the killer and the two of the boys he wounded, his cousin. He said they're like brothers. Anyway, are they? Was this young man capable of being anyone's brother? I mean, they might have acted like they were brothers, but that's, well, when you look at the history of brothers and you go back, well, brothers are capable of killing their brothers when they don't understand the living God and they don't understand the value of human life. You can trace that one all the way back to just outside the garden, as a matter of fact. All right. Now, speaking of young Americans, got a story here from the War File. Three American teenage girls were en route to Syria when they were arrested by police in Germany. They were emigrating to Syria to fight with ISIS from the Denver area. Yeah, the police say that they were taken advantage of by a slick media campaign being put on by ISIS. I guess all those heads lining the streets have some kind of appeal to teenage girls? I don't know. Officials say this is a worrisome trend of disaffected youth who are being radicalized. And the girls were 15 or 16 years old. And there are a number of other cases of high school age kids trying to get to Syria so they can fight with ISIS. Pretty bizarre. Yeah. Let's see here. Because they're minors, it's unclear whether they will be charged with anything. Well, that's unfortunate. I think if you sign on to go fight with ISIS, you shouldn't be charged with anything. Well, I guess you should be. But you should be summarily executed when you're captured. The evidence should be reviewed and a judge should make a decision and you should be shot in the head. You're dangerous. Huh. Now, they say, here's what the FBI officials in Denver say, that the youths, the juveniles, are safe and have been reunited with their families. Okay. Now, my question is, are their families safe? Another question that is begged, they're back in the Denver area. Is Denver safe? Hey. Weekly World View, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. I feel it building. Pressure. Yeah, the pressure's building, no doubt. In fact, we go to Ottawa. Up there, Islamic convert Michael Babu. Now, he calls himself Michael Zahif Babu because he was just a Canadian guy. But now he's a jihadi. Well, now he's dead. But he was involved in that October 22nd terror attack. Report here in my hands from Breitbart. He stormed the parliament. First, he shot an unarmed ceremonial military honor guard member. Shot him dead. And then stormed the parliament building there in Ottawa, and the Prime Minister hid in a closet. The Prime Minister of Canada hiding in a closet while a jihadi named Michael, who was carrying, by the way, he was carrying a Winchester Model 94 30-30 rifle. My daddy had one of those. Great weapon. Fantastic weapon. Really fun to shoot. In fact, my extremely attractive audio engineer and I, just last week or maybe the weekend before, drove down to West Texas where I grew up. And as soon as we got into my little tiny hometown, I could smell it. I followed my nose. Now, I haven't been there. I've been there once in the last 25 years. As soon as we got into town, I drove and I turned on a dirt road, and within a mile or so, we got out to the old shooting pit where my dad used to take all of us kids out. We used to go shooting, and we just checked out the old shooting pit. It was a gravel pit or something, but we all used to always go out there and shoot. It's now owned by some wind energy company, and we weren't supposed to be there. It said, private property and all that. But anyway, the whole town used to converge there every year for a turkey shoot. And I remember one year, I think it was my sister, won a contest, and she won a little Rossi 22 rifle, a little pump action. That was fun, too. But I'll tell you, that Winchester 94, that was a nice rifle. Boy, and that was one of the big 30 caliber. You know, and I'm 10, 11 years old shooting that big Winchester. That was fun. But I digress. How did I get off on that? I don't know. I'm talking about Ottawa and Michael Babu. Is an Islamist. Now, ISIS, they called for attacks on police and military in Western countries, and it's happening. A hatchet up in New York, right? Guy attacks a policeman with a hatchet in New York. We've got this Michael Babu up in Canada. By the way, ironically, Michael Babu is the son of Susan Babu, who's employed at the Immigration and Refuge Board of Canada. She's the chairperson of the immigration division, and her son is an Islamist. Well, not anymore. He's dead now. And by the way, Babu, he was prohibited from possessing firearms by the government of Canada. They have strict gun control laws in Canada, and they didn't work on this guy. And his mom is a government parasite. I mean, bureaucrat, just ironically. So you know what I'm thinking as I'm watching this? I'm watching the story of the Ottawa Islamist, and there was another fellow this past week, who jumped the White House fence. I might as well say this week, because there'll probably be another one this week. And I thought to myself, as I'm kind of putting these two stories together in my head, you know, the caliph, the grand mufti of the Islamic State over there, Mr. al-Baghdadi, he has vowed to fly an Islamic State flag over the White House. And I'm thinking, well, with security the way it is at the White House, there's a pretty good chance they could do that. Literally. I mean, what is the Secret Service going to do if 15 or 20 guys decide to jump the White House fence with AK-47s and grenades and explosive belts and vests? What are they going to do? The bastards might get a flag hoisted over the White House, by golly. It's unbelievable. Now, you would think that the Canadian Parliament and the American White House are some of the most secure facilities on the planet. Well, guess what? The emperor has no clothes. And how long do you think it's going to be before the Islamists realize that they might be able to actually capture the White House or the Congress or the Canadian Parliament or the House of Lords in Britain? Anyway, I'm just saying, okay? I mean, you don't have to be a military genius to figure this kind of thing out, for crying out loud. I think we're vulnerable, is what I'm saying. Now, that's just from a tactical level. We are tactically vulnerable from these people. But strategically, why are we vulnerable? Why are we happening? Why is this happening? Why are teenage girls from Denver trying to get to Syria to fight with ISIS? Why is the son of a mid-level parasitic bureaucrat in Canada, why is he being radicalized to become an Islamist? Well, enter Mark Stein, who has a pretty good idea of why. By the way, I have lobbied for Mark Stein to replace Rush Limbaugh, and I would like it to happen as soon as possible. Now, I've been off talk radio, okay? Haven't been listening to rah-rah Republican talk radio in months now. Had an opportunity to listen to a little bit of it on our road trip with the family down into Texas and the Badlands of New Mexico. And then I remembered why I'm off talk radio. I just can't take it anymore. But the one ray of sunshine in the talk radio world is one Mark Stein. And he has an article, or at least there's a report on the Breitbart website. And Mark Stein says, quote, "The modern multicultural state is nothing. It's a nullity. It's a hole." A hole, he calls it. H-O-L-E, says it's a hole. And so people go looking for an identity. And some of them find it in relatively benign things like saving the planet through climate change and other cockamamie global warming theories. And other people, they just follow Justin Bieber. But a percentage of people, when they go looking for identity, find it in this planetary-wide Islamic imperialism, unquote. That's very perceptive of Mr. Stein. And see, this reminds me of not myself particularly, but fellows like me. When I was young full of urine and vinegar, and I wanted to do something. I wanted to make my mark on the world when I was young. And I was so brash that I joined the United States Marine Corps to prove how tough I was. Anyway, they beat all that out of me real quick. I came out of the Marine Corps much calmer person. But even so, later in life, I mean, I've done some things where, other people probably would have been, probably thought I was crazy because I got arrested and things like that. But there's young men who want to make their mark on the world, and they don't want to follow Justin Bieber, and they don't just want to smoke pot, and they don't just want to play video games. And this kind of thing attracts them. And now Stein calls it the modern multicultural state, and he says it's a nothing, it's a void, it leaves people looking for identity. I would add to that, Mr. Stein, that it's the modern secular state. Secular. No matter how much you secularists and you people who troll on the Media Matters website, no matter how much you want to act like religion is nothing and that God doesn't exist, you're wrong about all that. Religion is something and God does exist. And young men, especially, and women apparently, we got these three from Denver, they need to be restrained within the bounds of an understanding of the living God and a relationship with their Creator, or they will be, a certain percentage of them, will be seduced by ideologies like this. And Mark Stein is absolutely correct. Well, not absolutely. He should have added secular to multicultural. But I think that might be illegal on the radio to say anything good about religion or God anymore. It may not be illegal, but it could very, very seriously limit your radio career. And Mr. Stein may have realized that. So I get the sense that Mr. Stein is a Christian. But perhaps he's learned not to lead with that because he wants a career in radio. Doesn't want to end up on a podcast because he can't get on the radio because he's too radical. He talks about how Mark Stein talks about how the Canadian Prime Minister called the attack in Ottawa senseless violence. And Stein makes a brilliant point. He says it's not senseless. It's not like shooting up a liquor store Why is the President of the United States talking complete nonsense about this every time he's asked about it? Oh, it was President Obama who said. He said it was acts of senseless violence or terrorism. He puts that in there. But Stein points out it's not senseless violence when a man at the National War Memorial puts a bullet at point-blank range into a Canadian soldier. He says that's an assault on the Canadian state. It's not senseless violence. It's an act of war. But our leadership, they don't even recognize it for what it is. They're so confused. Anyway, I'll link to this Mark Stein story, and we can all lobby for Mark to replace Rush Limbaugh as soon as possible. Please, that way I could turn that show back on. What else do we have from the war file? Quickly, we've got, well, you all saw the video of the ISIS fighter with the American supplies that we dropped. The grenades, yeah, the rockets. Yeah, we dropped that to Kurdish forces outside of Kobani. But unfortunately, the wind took some of it into the hands of the ISIS fighters. And that's what happens when you're too scared to put enough men on the ground to fight a war. And by the way, we do have men on the ground. Where's that story here? Hold on. Here we go. So for all of you who have bought into this chant that we will not have boots on the ground, well, Corporal Sean P. Neal was the second Marine to die in the war against ISIS. There are approximately, he died last week. Details are not out yet, but he's the second. The first was Corporal Jordan Spears. He died on October 2nd. Fighting ISIS, and they are two of approximately 2,300 Marines assigned to the suicide unit of U.S. Central Command. Now, they call it the Crisis Response Unit, but it's essentially a suicide unit. For the president to put 2,300 Marines on the ground against a force that could number in the tens of thousands, he should be arrested and impeached for that. But there you have it. So for those of you who believe we don't have boots on the ground or we won't put boots on the ground, we do have boots on the ground. We just don't have enough boots on the ground. And that's why we're dropping supplies that end up in the hands of ISIS. White House Deputy National Security Advisor, he says the U.S. government's confident that the emergency airdrop supplies were falling into the right hands. Well, and that's true when you look at it through Barry Obama's eyes, because Barry supports all states equally, including the Islamic State. So as long as we're dropping supplies in, shouldn't they get some too? View, Doug McBurney here, or you could just call me McBurney. Just McBurney works. He reminds me of my days back in the military. Hey, McBurney, get over here. I got in so much trouble when I was in the Marine Corps. I was a low-level enlisted guy, radio operator. And when I was in, there was a term for losing a stripe or getting court-martialed or getting office hours, non-judicial punishment. If you had to go in front of the company commander for punishment, they called that getting burned. So my nickname was McBurn Me when I was in the Marine Corps because I was a stupid kid. Like I say, they beat all that urine and vinegar out of me real quick. Anyway, back to the war file. Afghan poppy cultivation is at an all-time high after all the blood and treasure spent by the United States of America and the United States Marine Corps and the Army and the Air Force and the Navy there in Afghanistan and all the dead and wounded. What do they call it? Oh, my gosh. They actually say they had a counter-narcotics strategy in Afghanistan. Questions are now being raised about the effectiveness of the United States counter-narcotics strategy in Afghanistan. Questions are being raised. Poppy cultivation's at an all-time high. I think it's time to set the questions aside. It didn't work. Listen to what happened. This boost in production of the opium poppy is primarily the result of new deep well technology that we gave to the Afghanistanians. These ignorant savages. We give them the technology that, according to this Free Beacon report, has allowed the Afghans to turn large portions of the once uninhabitable desert into fertile land, arable land. So when you give savages, backwards, savages, pagans, when you give them freedom and technology, what do they use it for? Well, they use it to destroy the world and to destroy themselves. They're not growing corn. They're not growing beans. They're growing opium poppies. Why? Because they're savage pagans, and they can't handle the technology that the Christian West has been able to use, at least up until now, and not utterly destroy ourselves in the world. You can't trust a bunch of backwards pagans with technology or freedom. Unfortunately, they need to be brought along. They needed to be Christianized. We've had 10 years to Christianize this place and bring these people into some sense of civilization, but we haven't done it because we're too nice. Well, we wouldn't want to offend their heathen pagan religion that's actively destroying the world, killing people, enslaving people. Millions, especially women. Well, we wouldn't want to offend them. All right. Questions are being asked about the effectiveness of the counter-narcotics. Just get out of here with that. I have a quote here from someone at the DOD. They say, there's no silver bullet to eliminate drug cultivation or production in Afghanistan or to address the epidemic of substance abuse that plagues too many Afghan people. There's just no silver bullet. We don't know what to do. Christianity is the silver bullet, you moron. How about get them out of their pagan, backwards, destructive religion into a relationship with the living God who's their creator and who loves them? People who love each other don't sell heroin to each other. All right. And yes, I know it would take time, okay? But we've already wasted 10, 12 years, for crying out loud. All right. We're rapidly running out of time. Got to go to the politics file. The ironic story of the week. This is from, well, as reported by WorldNet Daily, the man charged with managing the American response to the deadly Ebola virus is on the record advocating a reduction in the world's population as a means of social and economic advancement. That's right. Ron Klain, who's been appointed as the Ebola czar, as weird as that is, when asked in an interview what he thought to be the top leadership issue challenging our world today, said, quote, I think the top leadership issue in the world today is how to deal with the continuing growing population worldwide, burgeoning populations in Asia and Africa that lack the resources to have a healthy, happy life. The problem is all these people, too many people, and now he's the Ebola czar. Now, here's the thing. There's virtually no one within Barry Ho's orbit that he could have appointed that wouldn't have said something like this at some point already. So it's not like Ron Klain's the only population crisis guy in Barry's. Barry could have just thrown a dart into a crowd at any one of his dinner parties, and he would have hit someone who thought we needed to reduce the population of the world. Let's see here. They don't say when he said this. Klain says, I think we've got to find a way to make the world work for everyone. And climate change impacts the overpopulation issue. He's the Ebola czar. Yeah, I predicted this. But how hard is that? I'm not a prophet, right? It doesn't take all that much. Let's see. Houston Mayor Anise Parker, she's in the news again. Guess what? I'm not going to read it, right? Because I don't care. Get out of here. I've got her on my video. That's enough. She doesn't get any more press from me. Hillary. Oh, this is classic. Breitbart's reporting that Hillary was at a Democrat fundraiser last Friday. And in her speech to the throng of socialist, progressive, liberal, clenched-jawed, clipped-haired, post-abortive women that she tends to attract, she said this, quote, "Don't let anybody tell you it's corporations and businesses create jobs," unquote. Yeah, that's what she said with a straight face. And then she goes on to slam trickle-down economics. But she says, corporations and businesses don't create jobs. Don't let anybody tell you that it's them who do that. And you know what's funny is, Hillary is partially correct. Because corporations and businesses don't create jobs. They don't. Jobs are a byproduct of creating products and services that people want. If you create a good enough product or service, eventually you need to hire more people to help you get out the service and the product. That's how jobs are created. Businesses are not started to create jobs. Now, Hillary Clinton and her ilk in the government, they know about creating jobs. They create all kinds of jobs for their cousins, for their donors, for their mistresses, right? They know about creating jobs. That's what the government does. It creates jobs. All right, now we've got the UN. The UN is in Detroit, or they were last week. They met with the mayor there and the city council to discuss the water shutoffs. Have you heard about this crisis in Detroit? People who are not paying their water bill, they're getting their water shut off. Shock of shocks. You say it ain't so. That's right. These people don't pay their bills and their water gets turned off. Well, they've called in now the special rapporteur on the right to adequate housing. That's right. That's a UN. They have a special rapporteur on the right to adequate housing, and they've also called in the special rapporteur on the human right to water and sanitation. Yeah, her name is Katerina de Albuquerque. I'm not making that up. Katerina de Albuquerque and Liilani Farah, they're both rapporteurs on human rights that don't exist. The right to housing and the right to sanitation and water. If we had a right to water, then why do we get water bills? It's because you don't have a right to water. And water doesn't make it to your house for free. You have to pay for your water. And if you don't pay for your water gets turned off. Well, these people, they don't understand this. These people in Detroit, I'm sure some of these people have been on welfare for generations. They don't know what it means to pay a bill. When they found out they got a water bill, they were in shock. What do you mean we have to pay for our water? Anyway, so these, I think a lot of these people in Detroit are victims. I mean, literally, since they were baby children, they've been on the dole, and they don't understand. They're shocked that someone's come to turn their water off. Well, these UN rapporteurs, they stopped by neighborhoods over this past weekend where water's been shut off. And the story, as reported by CBS in Detroit, the reporter writes, the UN officials can make recommendations, but they can't force the city to make changes. Just in case you were wondering, the UN still can't make the city of Detroit turn the water on, at least not yet. But in a democratic, republican form of representative government, that day is coming when the people will vote for themselves free water. Yes, they will. And on their way to destroying the country, they will vote themselves free water. All right, we're almost out of time. I got a story from CNN here. Have you heard about the scandal at UNC? Have you heard of UNC? That's UNC, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. UNC. They have what are called paper classes. They're not real classes. And 3,100 students enrolled in these fake classes over the past few years just to boost their grade point average. And the CNN story asks, well, what's going to be their punishment? What's going to happen to them? Are they going to lose their degrees? Well, no, nothing's going to happen. nobody really knows what to do. It's such a vast conspiracy that literally, I mean, you would be taking away the degrees of everyone who graduated UNC in the past decade. So they say, well, then we're not going to do anything about it. This is reason number 831 to keep your children out of the government-funded public education system, because they may not actually get an education. They may just sign up for paper classes. But now there is a body that gives accreditation to schools and degrees. They say they are considering options and possible courses of action. And that's the last you'll ever hear about that story. I guarantee it. You'll never hear another peep. All right, now we have, I'll save that for when I'm on KGov this week. Oh, finally, I reported last week about Wellesley. Well, a student who was born a female wanted to run for the school's office of multicultural affairs coordinator. Well, she has been rejected because she transgendered over to a boy, and now she's considered a white man, and they won't have her. Him. It. They won't elect her. Does that make sense? I know it's hard to follow. She was born a female. She went to Wellesley, transgendered herself to a male, and now she's considered a white man. And what do they hate at Wellesley? White men. So she cannot be, she cannot run. Well, she is going to run, but there's a campaign against her from the other dykes at Wellesley. They say they don't want to have a white man in that position because it's the director of multicultural affairs. And so now I've left you all confused, but that's the way it goes when you move into a world where up is down and right is left and right is wrong. And he is a she is an it, and we don't know what's going on. But that's the show for this week. And I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, and AmericanRightToLife.com. And as always, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. And a special thank you to my extremely attractive audio engineer. And we'll be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.